stories carry with them great power.
They can transport us into the light and into the dark.
And into a place in between, a land of shadows.
It is in this land where the macabre and the strange reign.
With tales of terror,
tales of hope,
tales of the whimsical,
and the weird.
These are stories told in the shadows.
And we are the Shadow Storytellers.
The young woman you're about to meet is facing the devilish task of earning a living. Don't worry. As long as her looks and her attitude are just right, someone's sure to offer her an opportunity to justify her existence. Whether that opportunity is as dismal as the pits of hell or too good to be true, she will, of course, say yes. After all, she has nothing to lose but one little soul, right? Remember to think positive thoughts as you venture into a story we call, Can I Ask You a Favor?
When I turned 16, I was determined to get a good price for my soul. And why shouldn't I? It was a fierce soul, a useful soul, and the only one I'd ever have. The least I wanted in exchange for it was a life of reasonable comfort, and maybe a position of moderate respect in the hereafter. But by the time I turned 21, my parents were getting impatient with my pickiness. We argued about it, viciously. But in the end, I couldn't blame them. The demon who owned them both was squeezing them pretty hard over the issue, while I dragged my feet waiting for the perfect offer. He had cursed our house to grow 1 square inch smaller for each week I continued to live there, and my parents returned home each night with less skin. So, I took one more afternoon to lie on the shore of the Great Sulphur Lake that gives my town its name, while I debated whether to supplicate before Sroknor, Lord of Physical Transport, or Svonek, Lord of Mild Unregulated Stimulants. They were the only two who currently had open altars within a 50-mile radius. For about 5 seconds, while I watched the pungent blue flames dance on the surface of the lake against the rust-colored sky, I considered walking right into them while I was still free and clear. But where would I go from there? Into the arms of some rumored stranger I'd seen no trace of, had no reason to trust? A stranger who, even if the rumors were true, would probably reject me anyway for running away from my predicament. And then there was the little detail that I really, really wanted to live. I was reading through the specifications for Zvonek's preferred offering when my black book began squirming in my pocket, sending pulses of itchiness down my left leg. I scooted farther away from the flame surf as I pulled the book out, protectively gripping its slightly greasy cover. The book was my only connection to my friends. To anyone, in fact, who didn't live with me or happened to bump into me on the street. Its pages were full of blood and signatures and endless lines of conversation, complaints, decisions, and private jokes. The flow of those things had slowed to a trickle as the people I'd grown up with had supplicated and disappeared into their roles, but I held on to the hope that it wouldn't dry out completely. The itching stopped, and the book opened itself in my hands to the relevant section. The picture at the top of the page had changed since the last time I'd looked at it, enough that I had to double-check the signature to be sure I was looking at the same Gina I'd spent my childhood summers playing dress-up and video games with. Maybe I'm a bad cousin, but there was nothing familiar about that put-together woman with the perfect hair and tailored suit. "Hey," said the freshly written message at the bottom of the page. "Can I ask you a favor?" I pulled the writing attachment out of the spine of the book and stuck it on the end of my right index finger, where it punctured the skin and anchored itself to give me a steady flow of blood. "What's up?" I wrote back. "You look amazing, by the way. Different, but amazing." "Ha, yeah, getting out of Sulphur Lake will do that to you," she replied. I'd always suspected this would be the case. Relocation to a city was one of the terms I'd been unsuccessfully holding out for. Before I could reply, her next message appeared in glistening red below mine. "I'm coming back for a few weeks, though. Meet me in the diner and I'll explain. Don't worry, it'll be fun. And it'll give us a chance to catch up." For the sake of tourism, the diner was perched on the edge of a bottomless chasm, filled with a darkness that overflowed it like a thick, heavy fog and made it difficult to see where you were stepping. I usually trod carefully there, not just because of the darkness, but because I was always irrationally afraid that my footsteps would be the ones to dislodge the whole building and send it tumbling into the void. This time, the moment I opened the door, Gina nearly knocked me over with a hug. I don't think we'd hugged for a good 10 years. We'd been pretty close right up until she left, but neither of us had been the most affectionate teenagers. "You came!" she squealed. "You thought I might have something better to do?" I joked. "No, it's just been a long time." She pulled me over to the booths, and the horrible part of me took a moment to notice the differences between the woman in the picture and the one in front of me. There were loose threads on the cuffs of her blouse, scratches on her glasses lenses, and dark shadows under her eyes, though those were probably just from the length of the drive. The little imperfections weren't enough to make me stop wishing I could change places with her on the spot, but they made her place feel a little less far away from mine, which was nice. As soon as she'd settled herself in the skin leather seat, she pulled a deck of cards from her pocket and fanned them out on the table. Their backs were printed with a lacework pattern in a shocking shade of pink. "Pick a card," she said. "Is that the favor?" I asked. "Half of it," she said. "What's the other half?" "It's on the card." Rather than extend the suspense, I took one at random and flipped it over. A single sentence was written on the other side in neat script. "Order dessert first." After a morning of existential dread for myself, and worry about what kind of trouble Gina might be in, I couldn't help laughing. "What is this?" I asked. "It's what you need," said Gina. "I need dessert." "Trust me and do it," she said, as the waitress approached our table with the menus. "Okay, fine," I said. "Can we start with 2 slices of the pie of the day?" "Great choice," the waitress chirped through her shortened vocal cords. "You just snagged the last 2 from the apples we got in yesterday." My mouth startled me with its sudden watering. "Well," I swallowed and tried to sound nonchalant. "That's a step up from last week's scorpions." "You're telling me," the waitress agreed, jotting down our order with hands covered in sting welts. Gina winked at me as the waitress returned to the kitchen. "Told you," she said, looking a little less tired, a little smoother under the eyes. "Now check this out." She squinted in concentration. The freshness and vigor that had returned to her face left it again, but in their place, a crisp lavender blouse materialized in her hands. Once it was fully solid, she handed it to me. It looked just my size, down to the extra-wide shoulders. "For your supplication ceremony," she said. "Oh," I said, thrown back to the thoughts I'd been stewing in before coming here. "Thanks." The waitress returned with our pie, which I almost didn't want to touch, not knowing when I'd even get to smell something so delicious again. But I couldn't resist for long. The flaky texture and spicy sweetness in my mouth wrestled against my anxiousness and curiosity. "So," I said, doing a terrible job of sounding casual.
"Hecatope allows you to wield freeform magic?"
"Oh, I don't belong to Hecatope anymore," Gina said, as if this were the most normal bit of news a person could have.
"You were bought out?" I asked.
"It didn't work quite like that," Gina said, before breaking off a perfectly shaped bite of crust, as if she ate this way every day.
"How did it work?" I asked.
She broke into a grin.
"You want to know if you could join me?" she asked. "Because I really, really think you could. How cool would that be? You and me crushing it together?"
A nervous smile stuck to my face and wouldn't leave.
"Yeah," I agreed. "But crushing what exactly, though?"
"Pick up the one that belongs to you," Gina said, stacking her cards back into a deck and nodding at the one I'd chosen. I picked it up, wondering if she was going to close her eyes and ask me to put it back in the deck. "Give it to someone," said Gina. I held it out across the table. "Not me," she said. "It can't go backwards. Give it to someone new and make sure they've accepted its message." But we already got the last two slices of pie, I pointed out. Don't worry about that. I looked self-consciously around the little diner at the handful of other occupied tables. You'll learn fastest by doing, Gina assured me. So I got up and walked over to a table with a young man and woman, probably a tourist couple on their way to somewhere more interesting than here. Hi, I cleared my throat. Do you two like fortune cookies? The woman smiled up at me with strained politeness, stirring the layer of darkness on the floor with her foot. Sure, said the man. Well, this is a similar concept, I said, holding up the card and realizing that I was talking unusually fast. But without the cookie. Oh, said the man. The cookie's my favorite part. I had nothing to say to that, so I charged on ahead. You just read it, I said, and it tells you what you need. And whatever it is, you'll be the one who can provide it? The woman guessed, still with the same stiff sweetness. I glanced back at Gina, who shook her head. No, I said. Tell you what, if that's where this ends up going, you just hand it right back to me. Fine, I'll take that bet, said the woman, taking the card from my hand. Her face lost all its brittle edges as she examined it. When she set it down on the table, there were only two words on it. Ask him. She looked at her partner and spoke in a voice that was almost unrecognizably plain. Don't stay in Ashtop. Come back to Salt Garden with me before it's too late. I don't care what we have to trade for a place together. Please. By this point, the man had climbed all the way onto the table to kiss her. Neither of them seemed interested in whether I was still there or not, so I took this moment to retreat back to Gina's table, noticing a warm buzzing in my chest as I went. Gina, with the shadows gone from her eyes again, was holding up both hands for a double high five. That was beautiful, she squeaked with excitement as she squeezed my hands. You're a natural. Do you feel that? She pointed to my sternum, and I put a hand there over the buzzing. What is it? I asked, hoping I knew the answer. Gina smiled mysteriously through another bite of pie. Providing this service carries rewards. I toyed with the feeling, pushing it outward down my arms. Experimentally, I imagined it stretching past my fingers, wrapping around my fork, lifting it to my lips. When the fork actually lost contact with the table, I got so excited that I dropped it into the dark. The next uncharacteristic squeal of excitement came from me, before Gina joined in. So where's the altar? I asked. What kind of offering do I need to prepare? Oh, honey, said Gina, patting my wrist. We're not going to ask you to do that. My chest contracted, crushing the power back out of place and down into my stomach. But you said I was a natural. You are, Gina squeezed my hand encouragingly. But our queen doesn't operate that way. There is no altar. You would only have to pledge to me, and I accept handshakes. No exotic ingredients or blood sacrifices required. To you, I repeated. My chest had stopped crushing itself, but my heart seemed to be caught in a slow free fall toward the shallow darkness carpet. What, is that worse than the plans you already had? Gina chuckled. No, but there's no way it's allowed, I said. An adult human can't own a soul. Where is that written? Gina asked playfully. It's the way it is, I said. Right, Gina gave a solemn nod. And if something has been one way for all of your epic 2 decades of life, that must be how it always was and always will be. You're only 3 years older, I started. But I listen, said Gina. Ask your parents. Ask your grandparents. Who has grandparents at our age? I laughed. Well, if we did, Gina insisted, they'd tell you that in their day, souls were only collateral in case you did your job badly. Humans didn't sign them over as an automatic part of the deal. There was even a time, before that, when humans actually ruled the Earth. when most of them would live out their whole lives without even seeing a demon.
That's a fairy tale, I said. But the sentence ended less confidently than it began.
Gina sighed and leaned forward against the table.
If it helps, she said. Don't think of me as a human. We prefer to be called shamans.
Shamans? I repeated. It was only because I needed so much for this to somehow be real that I managed to say it seriously.
Shamans, said Gina, without a touch of irony. Women so fierce we've ascended beyond our humanity to wield the dark forces for ourselves.
Yeah, I understood the pun, I said.
It's what I am, said Gina, straightening up and looking for a moment like someone who really could change the rules of possibility. It's what my soul keeper is, and it's what you'd be. And together, we can create our own space in this world and the next.
To avoid Gina's gaze, I looked away across the diner. At our waitress, who had dropped flat to the darkness-covered floor and fallen asleep the moment the shift changed. At the couple still passionately kissing on top of their table with the magic card clutched in the woman's hand.
I know it's a lot to take in, said Gina. But do you really want to turn around someday and realize you said no to everything you ever wanted just because you assumed you couldn't have it? Really, what do you have to lose?
Our new waitress arrived at our booth, with her mouth stapled into a permanent smile, and her lower body replaced with a gyroscope on steel high heels.
Nothing I was going to get to keep, I said, and reached across the table to Gina.
Our handshake produced the searing heat of a bargain made. Gina gave me her entire deck of cards, with instructions to convert them into my own inventory by completing the task each card assigned me. I was supposed to finish them by the weekend and then join Gina and some of her shaman friends in distributing cards to the public. This timeline would maximize my rewards, Gina said, because it would keep the cards happy and in motion, preventing them from extracting the tax of energy they tended to take from their owners when bored. The process of converting the deck made for one of the most intense, harrowing, transformative weeks of my life.
Tell your parents you appreciate them.
That task alone led to a whole evening of sobs and hugs and our first family board game in years. We couldn't actually finish the game, my parents couldn't keep their eyes open long enough, but I promised myself that once I'd gathered my first serious haul of magic, I'd use it to charge them up for a rematch. Then there were the cards that were just for me. Cut your split ends. Reread your favorite book. Get rid of the clothes that don't fit you. Take a 3-hour walk. I was exhausted by the time I was halfway through the deck, but I kept going, drawing one more card and then another one after that. It felt like I was being power washed inside and out, and I didn't want to back away half clean. As I built up my stack of finished cards, I imagined myself showing up for distribution day as a completely different person, clean and confident and self-possessed, making Gina do the same double take I'd done after her message. Of course, I looked almost the same as always in the mirror, except for the freshly trimmed hair and the new lavender blouse. But that was a start. I suppose the other changes would have to wait for more magic. Maybe on Monday I'd straighten my teeth like Gina's. When I arrived at the little row of shops along the lake's most picturesque fire beach, Gina was waiting for me with a dozen other women. All of them took turns complimenting my hair and my shirt and telling me how much they were looking forward to working with me.
"Aren't you going to introduce us?"
a woman my mother's age asked Gina while embracing me like a long-lost relative.
"Kelly, this is my cousin Bryony," Gina complied instantly. "Bryony, this is Kelly, my soulkeeper."
"Don't let that intimidate you," Kelly told me with a reassuring squeeze of my arm.
Gina's told you what we're creating here, right? We're all in it together. Exciting, isn't it? Now, let's see what you've got.
She turned me around by the shoulders to face a tired-looking family walking toward us. The two children were yanking frustratedly on the hands of their parents, who seemed to be trying very hard to convince themselves that they were enjoying their precious designated shopping time, browsing quaint window fronts, instead of counting down to bedtime. I felt myself digging my heels in as Kelly nudged me forward. Ordinarily, I would have given such irritable-looking strangers a wide berth. But then, ordinarily, there would have been nothing I could do other than get in their way. There was obviously something they needed. And maybe today, it was in my pocket. I threw myself completely into handing out the cards. With every shopper I approached, I was celebrating the beginning of my new life, and, I hoped, proving to Kelly and the rest that they were right to be excited about me. When the sky darkened in the mid-afternoon, and we had to take shelter from a heavy downpour of fire ants, Gina ran straight for the same shop awning as me. "How many do you have left?" she asked immediately, as we stomped on the ants that crawled under the awning toward us. "I've gone through about a quarter of my deck," I said proudly. "And the day is young." "A quarter," she asked. "Is that an estimate or an accounting?" "I'm not sure," I said, running my thumb over the cards, taken aback by the intensity of the question. "Maybe a little less? I mean, I only have two hands, and there's only so much foot traffic to go around." "Exactly," said Gina. "Huh?" I asked. That was when Kelly shouted to us from the next awning over. "I'm calling it, girls." "Yeah, you're right," Gina shouted back, swatting at the ants that were beginning to crawl up her leggings. "What?" I repeated. You're calling what?" "Even if this lets up, nobody else is going to be strolling down this road today," said Kelly. "But I've only handed out a quarter of my deck," I protested. Gina gave me a look, silently noting how a quarter had suddenly become only to me. "Oh, I wouldn't worry about that," Kelly said warmly. "Today was just practice. Next week, we're meeting in Mephistopolis. It's the biggest trip we've done all year. We'll have a smorgasbord of people to help, guaranteed." "Mephistopolis?" I repeated, panic trickling down under my skin as the ants crawled up the outside. "Exciting, right?" Kelly said. "Gina told me how much you were looking forward to traveling. It's one of the best things about this job. Other than showing people what they need and keeping the souls in the family, of course." "How am I supposed to get to Mephistopolis?" I hissed at Gina. "If I could do that, don't you think I'd be there already?" Gina hushed me and smiled at Kelly. "We'll see you there, can't wait!" Kelly's cute little car, decorated with a lace pattern just like the back of the cards, drove up to her awning all by itself. She brushed herself off and slid into the driver's seat with one last exuberant wave. "You'll get to Mephistopolis the same way you're going to get home through the rain," Gina told me, tapping my sternum. I'd almost stopped noticing the buzzing of collected magic there. Gina reached into her back pocket and pulled out a whole deck of cards. "Here," she said, pushing it into my hands. "Your share for the next week." "But I haven't finished." "You heard Kelly," said Gina. "We need to be ready for much bigger crowds next time." I took the cards, but apparently not quickly enough to set Gina's mind at ease. "Hey, you're with me on this, right?" she said. "Of course," I said. We shook on it. "I just want to understand how I'm supposed to..." I know, you're right," Gina said, trying to sweep her frazzled hair back into place. "Okay, first secret of making this work, use whatever you have, however you have to." In demonstration, she projected a translucent field of pink above her, in the shape of an umbrella, and stepped out from under the awning. After a few moments of concentration, I imitated her. I stayed close so that our two shields overlapped as we jogged over the top of the fire ant carpet toward my home. "That doesn't just apply to transportation," said Gina. "Remember, you're free. You make the rules. If you've got nothing but time, you use time to prep your cards. If you're short on time but you've got some spare magic, make up the difference with that. Who's going to tell you not to?" This was how I'd hoped it would be, working with Gina. "Is there a second secret?" I asked, as much to keep her tutoring me as because I wanted to know. "Yes," she said, her tone deadly serious. "The second secret is to stay positive. When you doubt that this can work, that's when the demons get their hooks back into you. So any negative talk from yourself, from other people who don't understand, the moment you sense it, you've got to shut it down before it can damage your magic." I'd never handled magic outside a demon's control before this venture, but this didn't sound that different from the theoretical safety measures I'd heard of. And the third secret, Gina went on, is that you can't do this alone. But I'm not alone, I said. Isn't that sort of the point? I can't be there to help you with everything, she said. After you finish prepping your cards this time, you need to get started building yourself a team. But all my friends are gone, I said. Everyone I know is spoken for. Gina looked both ways and then stepped off the main road into the dead forest that bordered two sides of Sulphur Lake. It doesn't matter, she whispered. What doesn't? I asked. Whether they're spoken for, she said. Our queen doesn't care about demon code. She'll keep the secret of anyone who wants to take and give her cards behind their lord's back. And if they distinguish themselves in her service, she'll buy them out of their contracts and allow them to pledge to a soul keeper. I stared at Gina, and she nodded with wide eyes, acknowledging the weight of this secret. I wouldn't have invited you if I didn't think you were cut out for the real work, she said softly. Go liberate some souls. I worked my way through the cards again as I waited for the right moment to approach my parents. I could feel the boredom of the older cards like lead in my shoes, and the new ones seemed to have run low on helpful, actionable suggestions for my life. Maybe the pursuit of all my needs was already in the works, in the form of the Mephistopolis trip, and there wasn't much more to be said on the subject. Or maybe the cards thought I needed some quiet, low-stakes ways to feel useful while I waited. Make yourself 200 handwritten business cards, they directed me. Eat a breakfast rich in iron. Think of 10 fun things to do with magic. I could have thought of 100 things easily, but I didn't do any of them. I hoarded the buzz in my chest, releasing only a few stingy sparks when I absolutely had to, knowing that I was going to need more, not less, before I tried to transport myself over 400 miles to a place I'd never been. When I heard the front door open, late in the evening, the next card I drew simply said, "Do it now." I went straight to the kitchen, the one place my parents were almost sure to go before falling into bed. Mom was slumped over the breakfast table. Dad had his head in the fridge and was piling sandwich ingredients onto the counter. Dust bread and mealworms and a precious jar of pomegranate jelly. "Hey," I said. Dad bumped his head, and for a moment the two of them stared at me, baffled at the novelty of our paths crossing twice in 1 week. I wondered for a moment if they were going to be angry today, with the fact that I was still here, but after a few seconds, Dad silently held out the jelly jar. "Oh, no, thanks," I said. "I just wanted to let you know I've decided what to do with my soul." Dad set the jar down, clapped his hands together, and dropped to his knees. "That's wonderful," he said. "Who's the lucky Dark Lord?" my mom asked, reminding me what her smile looked like. "Well," I said, "it's a little complicated." My dad's face fell slightly, but my mom stayed on task. "Do you need help with your offering?" she asked. "Actually, yeah, I do need your help with something," I said. I presented my prepped stack of cards and fanned them out. "Pick a—" "Oh, no," my dad groaned. "No." He seemed to doubly regret his gesture of celebration as he tried to get back up from the floor without tearing any of the stitches that held his hands together. "What?" Mom asked. "What is it?" "It's not a solution," Dad answered her. "The mailroom lady's daughter is doing it, too. It's just another ploy to avoid supplicating to a real demon."
"Oh, like that's a totally unreasonable thing to want to avoid," I snapped.
I expected Dad to shout back about how it had turned out well enough for him, but he had his full weight propped against the counter and couldn't seem to find the breath for that. He just leaned there and made a choked, keening sound. Then he sniffed, coughed, and spoke in something close to his normal voice. "Did you do any homework at all before getting mixed up in this?" "How would I do that?" I asked. "You could have consulted the knowledge market," he said.
I could have asked demons and thralls to give me a consensus on whether not supplicating is an option, I said. Huh, wonder what they'd say. Dad looked helplessly to Mom. I can't, he said. I can't. Mom got up and put a hand on his shoulder. All right, it's all right, she told him. We'll have a talk. She pushed the bread and jelly back into his hands and ushered him off to bed before closing the kitchen door and turning to me. All right, she said again, rubbing her good eyelid to make it open wider. How about you explain all this from your side, starting at the beginning? I gave my mom the full rundown of what the Shemans were trying to do, including the part about buying people out of their existing contracts. Her expression flickered as she smothered a wistful spark of excitement. She was good at that, efficient, but not so much that I couldn't see it happen. So, this next meeting, she said. You really want to go? I nodded vigorously. I think it's the best chance I'll ever get, I said. Your best chance at what? She asked. My best chance to get out from under, I tried to explain. My best chance to get on solid footing. Kelly says we'll be able to reach a lot more people there. And I mean, why wouldn't we? There are over 500,000 people in Mephistopolis, and that's just the ones who live there full time. I believe I can do this, but not if I'm stuck here scrambling through my startup cards with no one to share them with. If I can get a few good days in front of a real crowd, I can build up some magic, some breathing room to get me to wherever I need to be next. I just need to get past this first hump and build some momentum. Mom listened, not so much to my words as to my voice, making me very conscious of its desperate earnestness. When my explanations burned out, she nodded, once, and an injection of relief stirred my magic supply. What about Dad? I asked. He won't stop either of us from doing something we've set our minds to, she said. He knows that. It's why he's so nervous. The responsibility of disproving his fears pressed the magic down around my solar plexus. Mom held her hands out for the cards. Show me what to do. Mom accepted what was left of my first deck, the one I'd taken to the gathering at the lake. For 5 straight nights she stayed up long after Dad had gone grumbling to bed, following each card's instructions. Under their guidance, she remade the front room into a welcoming, guest-ready parlor, adorned with magic-made wall hangings and throws in that signature lacy design. Twice she brought home a few women from work to draw their cards. They dusted off bottles of wine from the basement and giggled together as they followed instructions like, share a secret, demonstrate the first dance you ever learned, do an impression of someone you all know. I left her to enjoy her time with them, feeling an extra jolt of power in my chest each time a card that had formerly been mine changed hands again. It was those secondhand boosts that brought my first trip out of Sulphur Lake into grasping range. I spent a chunk of magic teleporting myself across my room just to make sure I could do it. I studied maps of Mephistopolis and practiced visualizing the exact spot at the top of the commercial district where I'd meet Gina and the rest. And I finished prepping my whole second deck, which I hoped would be enough to take full advantage of the opportunity when I got there. On the morning I was set to leave, I got up early enough to see my parents on their way out. Dad looked at me for a long while over Mom's shoulder, and then stumbled out without saying anything. Mom smiled at me with her eyes barely open. You're good to go? She asked, patting me on the arm. I think so, I said. If you've got a little extra, what would you say to celebrating with a quick coffee? My chest compressed protectively around the magic. I still didn't know quite what to expect today. What if I needed extra cards while I was there and I had to use a bit of magic to hurry through prepping them? What if that bit of magic was the same bit it would cost me to recreate a couple cups of coffee from memory? Mom saw the look on my face without my needing to explain. Maybe when you get back then, she said, and wandered out, even more like a sleepwalker than usual. I closed my eyes, pictured the spot on the map I'd gotten to know as well as my own room,
and pressed the magic down into a portal to take me there. It was such a relief to arrive among the Shemans. As soon as they saw me, they embraced me right into the middle of their group, with more hugs and questions about how I was, and whether I'd gotten one of those cards about fun magic and what I'd come up with for it. The first thing Kelly did was congratulate me on making the trip. She said she'd never doubted I could do it, but it meant a lot to know that she understood what a task it had been for me. Gina seemed a little less anxious than last week and unreservedly happy to see me. I don't think I'd realized how much I'd missed it, people being happy to see me, until I started to cry a little. This started a chain reaction, and soon half a dozen other women were hyperventilating and dabbing at their eyes, as visibly overwhelmed as I was. Most of them were new since last week. "Come on now, happy thoughts," Kelly encouraged us all indulgently. "Wherever you've been, wherever you thought you were going, it's behind you now. Look where we are." It was only then that I really did look at where we were. Mephistopolis was almost completely carved out of black volcanic rock, and its glittering, razor-sharp skyline towered so far over our heads that I could only see a sliver of the red-brown sky. We were standing on the main boulevard, where all the tallest buildings were gathered in one long, tight-packed row. Colorful, lit-up signs advertised expensive training courses, sporting events, and surgical procedures. It felt like twice the population of Sulphur Lake was passing us by on the sidewalks every few seconds. "Oh my gosh, there goes the Queen!" Kelly squealed and waved at an ornate, lace-patterned carriage that charged past on the boulevard, drawn by 6 enormous black sheep.
"Our Queen?" I asked.
There was a glow coming from inside the carriage that made my eyes tingle at the exact same frequency as the magic in my chest. Maybe if I ever had enough of it at once, it would start to give off visible light as well. "I heard a rumor she might be here," Kelly sighed ecstatically. "But I didn't want to get your hopes up just in case. She's a very busy woman." Clusters of cheers rose up along the boulevard as the carriage passed, from dozens of other Shemen teams. Realizing for the first time how big an event this was going to be, I wondered if I should have invited Mom to come along. But even if she had been free to go where she pleased, I wasn't sure my startup magic supply would have stretched to transporting us both. I'd make it up to her once I'd multiplied that magic here.
"Well," Kelly clapped her hands, "let's get to it."
"Right," I said, still watching the crowds pass with a half-claustrophobic awe.
"This seems like a good spot."
"Oh, not like that, dear." Kelly stopped me before I could get my deck out of my pocket.
"Why, what's wrong?" I asked.
"First, we pamper ourselves," Kelly said, leading the way across the boulevard toward some place called the Ash Spa. "Then we share the wealth." I glanced at Gina. She anticipated my impatience before she saw it, and she put an arm around me, pulling me toward the edge of the group as we followed Kelly. "Being around crowds is only half the point of trips like this," Gina explained in a whisper. "The other half is showing off that we're free to be here. The more people see that, the more they get curious about our secret, and the more they want it. So go with the program, pretend you don't have a care in the world, and try to enjoy yourself. It'll be worth it, I promise."
The woman at the Ash Spa welcomed us with a strained, skeptical smile and asked to see the brands of our lords to verify our indulgence allotment.
"We have no lords," Kelly announced proudly.
"Uh-huh," said the woman.
I instantly wanted to go back to the top of the boulevard, where all the disapproval in the world had felt miles behind me, and anything had been possible. I probably would have turned back if it hadn't been for Gina's arm.
"But not to worry," said Kelly. "We're perfectly capable of compensating you ourselves."
In demonstration, she wove a massive bouquet of artichokes out of the air. The woman's right eyebrow lifted ever so slightly at the sight of the near-forgotten, cold-weather delicacy. Without a word, she picked up the bouquet and stowed it under the front counter. Kelly smiled and proceeded regally to the rooms of ash mud pits, beckoning us to follow. I did my best to heed Gina's advice and enjoy soaking in mud that smelled a lot like the lake back home, sipping sweetened rye liquor. For the most part, I succeeded. When I didn't think about my time in Mephistopolis slipping away, or about how much magic I was contributing to the gifts we offered in return for each unordered round of drinks, it was almost like a real party. I got to complain about my dad's impatience with me, and about the whole supplication system, and I was showered with agreement instead of admonishments to grow up. But then it kept going. After the spa, there was a lunch buffet, and then hair appointments. We got into the buffet with more magical barter, but the hair salon hostess tried to kick us out at the first mention of not having lords. Kelly hypnotized her into thinking she'd seen our brands, and then handed us all a few extra cards to complete for her in repayment. By the time we actually started working the crowd, we were tired, tipsy, and at least in my case, magically destitute. Finally, I had the chance to make up some ground, to draw people to my pampered aura like a beacon, and show them what they needed. Excuse me, ma'am, I approached a lost-looking young woman. Pika, got my own, Sister Sheeman, she said, holding up her deck. Ah, sorry, I said, looking for someone else to try. Excuse me, ma'am, for the last time, fuck off! My second target shouted in my face, even though I'd never seen her before. With my stomach sour from the shock of her anger, I turned to the others. That'll happen, Gina assured me. Brush it off and keep going. I did. Along with the hundreds of other Shemans up and down the boulevard, I asked everyone I saw to pick a card, and I cheered along each time the Queen's carriage passed us, again and again on an endless loop. After 4 hours of this, Kelly started gathering the Shemans of my group to decide on a hotel for the night. I'd managed to hand out 10 cards by then, but by the feeling in my chest, no one had bothered to follow their instructions yet. Actually, I think I'll stay here a while longer, I said. Change a few more lives. Ooh, dedication, Kelly praised, walking backward to one of the taller, glossy black hotels.
Get it, Sheeman. Carve your own path.
I wished I'd known that was an option from the start of the day. Things got a little better after most of the other Shemans had gone to bed. The traffic was lighter, on the street and the sidewalk, but the people who were there were a different bunch, not yet tired of being asked to pick cards. I managed to deal cards to waitresses, bartenders, and strippers wrapped in warm coats, with their faces brushed with glitter. One of the waitresses seemed to get a good one, prompting her to make a tearful call to her rehab sponsor. By morning, my feet hurt so much that I would have willingly traded them for the unfeeling, work-enhancing substitutes most of the waitresses had. But I'd managed to earn back at least enough magic to teleport myself back home. A little after dawn, right around when the Queen began to make her circuits again, Gina came to find me. "Are you ready to get going?" she asked me. "Going?" I asked. "Aren't we supposed to be here for the weekend?" "Yeah, but Sundays are dead around here," she said. "Then why did you say weekend and not just Saturday?" I asked. She gave me a dirty look, and when I didn't retract the question, she groaned. "Okay, the truth is, Kelly just punched a guy at the breakfast bar who wouldn't let us in without Lord Brands. Apparently her cards told her to take us there, so she didn't know what else to do. We need to disappear before local security starts tracking down who she was traveling with."
"Are you serious?"
I shouted with the lack of restraint only an all-nighter on my feet could produce. Gina rolled her eyes with me, rather than at me, in the first flicker I'd seen of her old irreverence since she'd come back to Sulphur Lake. For a moment, I thought she might be about to offer sympathy. "Here," she said instead, holding out another deck just as thick as the one she'd given me last week. I didn't accept it until she let it go, and instinct stopped me from letting the cards scatter on the dirty sidewalk. "Hey!" I shouted, as she was about to turn away.
"How the fuck is this actually supposed to work?"
"I told you," she sighed. "That kind of negativity will destroy you. You need to shake it off and keep building your team." "This trip was supposed to be the perfect place to make magic," I said. "If I'm going home empty-chested after this, how am I ever supposed to get ahead anywhere else? How can I tell anyone else that they will?" "Maybe you should have planned a little more carefully," said Gina. "Eased up on the drinks, or brought a bigger deck to cover yourself with. I would have given you more cards to prep if you'd asked me." "Were you thinking that the whole time and didn't bother to tell me?"
I asked, a sudden swell of anger wrapping my words in saliva. Or did you just make that up right now? Gina put her hand to the bridge of her glasses, and for a fraction of a second I saw it shake. Then she looked up over her fingers, right at me. What part of Shaman did you not understand? She asked. You thought you could play the game with the demons, play it like the demons, without being ruthless? The ground had already been pulled from underneath me, so slowly that I barely noticed it leave. But in that moment, when I saw my big cousin almost admit what she'd done to me, that was when I felt myself fall. Has that worked for you? I asked her, shaking my head as I realized I already knew the answer. When you told me you needed a favor, you meant it, didn't you? That wasn't a ploy to see me again or help me out without making me feel like a charity case. You were drowning, and you decided to drag me under. And you haven't dragged anyone under? Gina challenged. I mean, recruited them? You told me to, I shouted. Just like Kelly told me to recruit you. Face it, she told me. The only difference between us is that I got here first. I couldn't look at her anymore. I couldn't look at myself in her scratched lenses. Where are you going? She shouted after me when I turned and walked down the boulevard. To see if I still have anything left to lose, I shouted back. I expected someone to stop me. Not Gina, but someone. I walked right up to the edge of the sidewalk, right in front of the Queen's carriage. I even hesitated an extra second, anticipating a crowd of shamans swarming to restrain me. The few who were out this early whispered to each other, probably speculating on whether I was supposed to be there, but none of them got in my way as I grabbed the handle and jumped in through the carriage door. The demon riding inside did not react, did not look up from the live mouse he was busy sticking pins into.
You are disillusioned, he said, after several full seconds.
He was completely naked, his chosen form as aggressively masculine as any I'd ever seen, all patchy hair and pectoral muscles and a barbed penis the size of my arm. I wanted to be more surprised. Yes, I said.
It happens all the time, he said, still focused on the mouse. Say what you came to say.
I can't live like this, can I? I stated, more than asked. Not even if I wanted to. Not even in the loosest sense of the word living. Not even the way my parents... You're the worst deal there is.
I am among them, he answered, unconcerned. There are others like me.
I felt as helpless here, alone with this invincible immortal, as I had on the crowded sidewalk looking up. When were you planning to have my soul transferred to you officially? I asked.
It makes no difference whether my name is on each individual deed, he said. All good things trickle up.
So is the whole Shaman thing just a sick joke? I asked. Is there some reason you prey on women's souls in particular?
I don't discriminate, he said. I have never rejected a man who wished to join my service.
And yet, I said. The demon set the mouse down, and it charged for the gap under the carriage door, still with so many pins in it that its feet could barely reach the ground.
I offer what women crave most, he told me. Freedom, respect, independence intertwined with community. And you have what I need. Sympathy. Pity. And ears and mouths in private spaces no advertisement can reach.
He leaned forward and placed his hand on my leg. There was an instant of panic before I realized he was reaching for the bulge of the black book in my pocket. Don't you already have every name ever written in a book? I asked, genuinely confused for the first time since seeing the look on Gina's face. Doesn't every demon?
What good does that do me?
The demon asked,
When your book grows a new page and speaks to you without the signature of a friend, do you read it? Or do you tear the page out and throw it away? Before I knew it, I was nodding in understanding. Anything else I can clear up for you? He asked. I paused to figure out what exactly I wanted from this exchange. Then I adjusted my hopes downward, to what might actually be possible, and then cut them in half again. I know my soul technically belongs to Gina, I said.
But is there any chance we could still do this the old-fashioned way? I'll get down on my knees and eat a raw goat's heart seasoned with a pulverized gift from my first love, or whatever it is that does it for you. I am tired of trying to wriggle away. I'm tired of hurting my family. I want this to end.
The demon broke into a low, thumping laugh. Didn't you hear me, peon? He chuckled. I don't want your paltry self. I want your access. I want the trust of everyone who loves you, their willingness to give for no reason but that. I want the juiciest cuts of soul matter, the ones even the most obedient thralls sometimes manage to withhold. I swallowed hard over the lump in my throat.
So what happens now? I asked.
Well, he said, with a reverberating laugh still hovering in his throat. It seems you have three options. One, you can stay positive and keep your new sisterhood. Two, you can burn all your bridges and try to buy yourself back from your cousin. All you have to do is get rid of all the cards in your possession before your next batch is due, and you're free to go supplicate to someone who'll give you a roof and half regular meals. Three. His lips curled back over serrated fangs. You can do nothing, and let the cards eat you alive.
I transported myself all the way back to my bedroom, hoping I could go unnoticed there for the rest of the day before having to face anyone. As shakily as reaching into a snake nest, I drew the first card from my unprepped stack. Rip out your tongue, it said. I shuffled it back in, pretending I hadn't drawn it at all.
Now that's just a lousy job of anticipating needs, I told the deck, my voice feeling hollow in my throat.
Stop playing stupid, the next card ordered. At least that was a task I could complete. I hope Gina enjoyed the boost. I can't serve you without speaking, I told the cards. Eat the full contents of the medicine cabinet, said the next one. I get it, I said. Finishing out the deck and escaping isn't actually on the table. I wondered again what would happen if I complied with a deadly instruction, or let the cards drain me dry, or picked an exit method of my own. Would I find myself in some other place? Or would I just rematerialize as a ghost at Gina's side to do her bidding on Earth for as long as she remained here? Either way, the fact remained that I wanted to live. I'll make my life worth more than my death to you, I promised the cards. Just be reasonable. Tell your mother what a wonderful time you had, said the next one. Words kept forming down its surface. Tell her you found an escape for her. Please, I said, tears coming as I realized I was asking too much.
Not that.
Put a drill through your head, said the next card.
Okay, okay, I sobbed.
I opened my black book to my mother's page, stabbed the writing attachment into place, and scratched out the required message. Keep going, said the next card. I thumbed through the rest of the book, full of everyone I had ever known. The very last pages of honest, well-intentioned communication I would ever have. Hey, I wrote over and over on 100 different pages. Can I ask you a favor?
Can I Ask You a Favor was written and performed by Fiona J.R. Tichenel. Narration was provided by Matt Carter. This episode was edited by Fiona J.R. Tichenel and Matt Carter. The Shadow Storyteller's theme, written and performed by Dennis Tichenel. The Shadow Storyteller's artwork by Kristen McQuiggan of Drop Dead Designs. Special thanks to Lisa Onzo and Greg Bowles for the use of their guest room in this recording. For more information on the Shadow Storyteller's podcast and our other fiction works, please visit our website at theshadowstorytellers.com. If you enjoyed this episode, please like and subscribe for more information on upcoming episodes. We hope you had fun, and we'll see you again soon.